Welcome to Parents Perspective. On a blustery fall day, I got out a pint-sized rake and said to my six-year-old, "If you'd like to rake the leaves, I'll pay you a quarter." He thought for a moment and then looked up solemnly and said, "No, but I'll do it for 50 cents. Whether it's impulse buying, long-term saving, or negotiating an allowance, our children's concept of money and how to manage it changes dramatically as they grow. From a parent's perspective, when, how, and what should we teach our children about money? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Today we have two experts to help us sort out all the questions that arise when we are dealing with money and children. Mary Lou Werthmann teaches parenting classes and adult education courses. She's director of a mentoring program in Maryland. She's the mother of a 19-year-old daughter. We're glad to have you with us, Mary Lou.
Thank you.
Janet Bodner is senior editor of Kiplinger's Personal Finance magazine. She writes a nationally syndicated column, Ask Dr. Tightwad, addressing kids, money, and family-related financial issues. She has three children, ages 10, 14, and 16. Welcome, Janet.
Thank you.
Mary Lou, why should children learn to manage money since they're still young and living at home with their parents?
My biggest reason is it's the safe environment, and if we don't teach them, who will? And I think it's too important. There's too many college kids, as my daughter's entering into college, I hear too many stories of students that have got 5 or 13 credit cards and they're up to $10,000 and more in debt. Mm. And I think that's worrisome, and certainly the parents can't bail them out, and it becomes a very stressful situation. Students end up with two or three jobs trying to pay off the minimum balance, and they really get into a mess. So that's what really brought it to the forefront to me, to say this is something we really need to start at a much younger age. We can't start when our children are in college because we can't monitor them as well.
What's the most common mistake parents make with children regarding money?
I think what I've found is that there's no long-range goal or overall plan. As you were saying, it sort of sneaks up upon you that you offer to pay 25 cents for something, and before you know, you're very involved, and you haven't really figured out what values you wanted to teach your children about money.
That's a problem, I think, also. When kids are young, they have a different feeling about money than when they get older. When they're younger, they seem to think it grows on trees and, mm-hmm. you know, 25 cents, 50 cents, $1.50, it's all about the same. And so why not negotiate for a little higher amount?
Well, you have to always think about a kid's eye view of money, which is very different from a grown-up's eye view of money, which will change as children get older, too. I mean, very young children don't really have a good concept of how much money really is. They don't have an abstract idea of it until they start to go to school and learn about money in school. I mean, you know that a preschooler will always choose a nickel over a dime, for example, or a quarter over a dollar bill, because a quarter you can spin or you can flip or you can put into a savings bank, whereas a dollar bill is, you know, just a piece of paper. And a $50 check is worthless to a, you know, 4 or 5 year old because they can't do anything with that. At least a dollar bill they can spend at the dollar store.
Janet, what is a recommended age to begin allowance, and what kinds of expenses do you recommend that it cover?
Well, I think that the age of 6 or 7 is probably a good age to start for the reason that I just said it. At that age, kids are learning about money in school, so that if you give them an allowance of whatever you choose, I think nowadays a dollar a week is really the barest minimum, and even $2 a week makes sense in metropolitan areas, certainly. But when they get the money, they have some concept of how much they're getting. So they know that a dollar is the same as 4 quarters, and 4 quarters will buy 2 video games, you know, in the movie theater. So when you're, you know, giving them an allowance, they know how far it's going to go. And it's very important that you link that allowance, and this is the Dr. Tightwad philosophy of allowance, that you link that allowance with certain financial responsibilities that the kids have. So you're not simply giving them that money on top of everything else you already spend on and for them. You say to them, all right, I'm going to start you on an allowance. It's going to be $2 a week. And in return for that, I expect you to buy all your own baseball cards or Beanie Babies or comic books or whatever it is that the child is interested in and that is age appropriate for that child. So you're shifting responsibility, financial responsibility, from yourself to your child.
Should allowance be earned?
I don't think the base allowance, if you mean should it be tied to chores, I don't think, and there are two schools of thought on this, and parents could really go head-to-head on this, but after years of talking to parents, What I hear from parents is that systems that are tied very strictly to chores are very difficult for many families to manage. Not all families, because some families are extremely well organized. But for some families, they just have trouble keeping track of the chores and the jobs that the kids are supposed to do. So what happens is allowance day comes along, and mom says, well, did you make your bed every day? And Junior says, sure I did. And she said, now, wait a minute, what about Tuesday? I came home from work, the bed was unmade. And he says, oh, but remember, I had early band practice that day. So you said I could, you know, wait. And you're thinking, well, did I really say that or not? So what happens is the parents give the money regardless, or they don't give the allowance, and then the whole system breaks down. So I think that rather than being tied directly to chores, I think that the financial responsibility angle is a much more direct connection, and it's easier for kids to manage and for parents to manage. And parents can always pay for individual jobs to give their kids a sense of earning money, you know, working for money. And that's easier to monitor. If they wash the car and they do a good job, they get paid.
What about getting paid for babysitting for their own families?
For their own families?
Mm-hmm.
You probably have something to say about this too. What I've said in the book is I don't think if it's just after school, you know, I mean, you're going to be a little bit late or you have to go to the grocery store or something. I wouldn't pay my children for babysitting for that. If I ask them to babysit on a Saturday night when theoretically they could be earning money babysitting for someone else, then I might be inclined to pay them, but I'd probably pay them a family rate.
Mary Lou, do you deal with this when you're teaching parenting classes? Does it come up?
Actually, I've had it from both angles. I come from a family of 13, so I babysat for my family a lot for free.
And good for you.
So I have a definite feeling about that. And my belief is the same as you were saying, Janet, that if your children have reached an age where they can make their own money with someone else, you really need to set up that time and ask them, are they free for that evening? And really respect their right to make an income as well. And so I think it's a mutual respect relationship is what I think should develop at that point.
In terms of expenditures, Mary Lou, what differences can parents expect between elementary school children and middle school children and high school children?
All right. One thing that I'd like to go backward just a little bit, because I work with low-income families, and I think that learning how to use money is very important to them as well, but being able to pay an allowance is difficult. Yeah. So one of the things that I have come up for an idea for them is to buy the Sunday paper because they want to buy it anyway to look for job ads, and then that's also when the coupons are in there. And if their child will take the time to cut out the coupons and then go to the store with mom and show where the coupons can be used, then the child gets all that money from the coupons. And then it's up to them how they want to spend it. So that's a way that parents that don't have a large income can still give their children money to learn how to handle it responsibly.
That's such a great idea.
As far as expenditures for the different age groups, I think that Janet was saying, I agree with a lot with what you said. In elementary school, I like to say the junk food. I'll take you to the movies, but you buy the junk food is one of my things. Or you can have a sandwich before we go if you'd like. And then I try to get the savings in. That's one of the things that I'm trying to stress because I think as Americans, we're getting more and more into debt. And so I think it's really important to start stressing that younger. So I like to say, let's start saving for something long range and short term and sort of get that idea across to them. And then birthday parties, I start to budget them. I give them an allowance of, say, $10 and say, this is as much as we're going to buy or spend for birthdays. As far as middle school, that's when I want to start giving an allowance monthly rather than weekly so that they have to begin to start gauging how they're going to be spending their money. And for that, I also incorporated the semi-yearly, I call it, clothing allowance so that I'm not giving them the huge amount, but I'm giving them enough that they have to start thinking about, do I really need these pair of jeans or these shoes or, you know, the sweater that's in style? Do I need a coat? That sort of thing.
How do you keep track of that? Do you give them the money or do you write down somewhere a record of who's spending how much? I had a lot of trouble with that when I did that with my kids. That's why I'm asking.
Okay. With my daughter at the junior high point, I kept a running total paper and pencil, kept it on the refrigerator. So it was invisible sight to all of us. At the high school level, I gave her the amount and put it into her account. Now I raised a saver. Don't know how that happened, but what I was finding is she wasn't spending it. She was saving it. She was hoarding it. And so school time would come around, and generally I would buy her three or four pair of jeans and, you know, five or six blouses and a couple of pair of tennis shoes. She was spending, you know, buying only two pair of jeans, maybe one or two blouses, and then she'd save the shoe buying until Christmas time. So what I found was that she spent a whole lot less on clothes than I was spending.
Oh, my goodness. She got by with less.
She did, absolutely.
When it's the kids' money that's on the line, it's just a whole different ballgame, which is why why allowance is so important, because they will spend unlimited amounts of money as long as it's yours. And mm-hmm. as soon as it's their responsibility. And, you know, Mary Lou's experience is interesting because I think a lot of parents assume that kids are just natural spendthrifts and they're going to spend every nickel that they get. But that really isn't true. A lot of kids mm-hmm. Are downright cheap. My kids are the same way. We have an allowance system where we use a little checkbook. Because I was always forgetting to give them their allowance. So we use a little checkbook, and I credit their allowance. Or they come to me. They're supposed to come to me at the beginning of the month, and I credit their allowance. So we have a written record of, you know, when it's actually credited. And then when they need money, they write me a check, and I pay them. So, you know, they see their account balance go down as they're writing the checks. And that really bothers them. I mean, they don't like to see the money go down. And, you know, they wouldn't have, if they didn't have this visual record of it, it would make a big difference, I think.
It's interesting. We had one who was very interested in spending money when he was mm-hmm. little and buying himself lots of different things. He wanted mm-hmm. to surround himself with material things. And when he went away to college, he became so cheap. One time he brought home a sweater and he said, "Mom, I bought this sweater. Do you think you could fix it? It's a little ripped at the neck." And I said, you know, it needed to be sewn all the way around the neck. And I said, "Where did you get this sweater? And how much did you pay for it?" "Oh, I got it at the thrift store and I paid 35 cents.
But he knew you could save anything.
Right. That's right.
We'll take a short break now, and we'll be right back to continue our discussion. For an audio cassette copy of Any Parent's Perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
The excellent new book, Parents as Mentors, by hosts Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is a practical guide to bringing out the abilities in your child. Parents as Mentors is available at all bookstores.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Mary Lou Werthmann and Janet Bodner about helping kids manage money.
Janet, how can parents introduce children to budgeting?
Well, I think that we've already, Mary Lou's had some good ideas on this subject. With kids, having their own money to manage is the first step. But then the question is, well, what do they do with that money once they have it? You know, and how much do you guide them? I think that they need to have, again, certain responsibilities that they know they have to pay for, sort of the fixed costs or the equivalent of your fixed costs, because they don't have to pay insurance and utilities and mortgages and things like that. So there are certain things that they need to spend their money on. And then perhaps you even want them to save a certain amount. Again, if you have a saver like Mary Lou does, you don't have to encourage them. They're doing it on their own. If not, perhaps you want to have them save, say, 10% of their allowance or whatever you think is appropriate. Beyond that, they should probably be able to spend the money on things that they want to spend the money on, because they do need to make some decisions. But kids aren't necessarily natural shoppers. I mean, they don't know. They want things. They're naturally acquisitive, but they're not necessarily good consumers, and they don't have a good idea of how things fit into their budgets. And I think that going on shopping excursions with them, looking through catalogs has worked really well with my children, because they get an idea of how much things cost. And when they want to buy, especially when they get onto a little bit older and they get into clothing allowances, and of course they want to buy name brand clothes, which tend to be very expensive, and when they see how much the things actually cost, it brings them up short. First of all, they can't afford everything, or they shouldn't be. If you've done it right, they shouldn't be able to afford every single thing they want. So they're going to have to make some decisions. You know, do they want to go to the expensive name brand store and buy a shirt, for example, and then they'll just wear standard issue jeans because they can't really afford both? Or maybe they want to wait for something to go on sale. One of the rules that we have in my house, which has actually worked, is we have a $50 sneaker rule. And I'm willing to pay $50 for the kids' sneakers. And if they buy sneakers that cost more than that, they have to make up the difference. And this, my 16-year-old son wears a size 12 shoe, and it's hard to find sneakers that are really very cheap. And $50, some people would consider to be extravagant. Some people would consider that to be cheap compared with $150 sneakers that you can buy. For me and my budget, I think it's reasonable in the area where I live. But my kids have never bought a pair of sneakers for more than, I would say, $85, in which case they would have to come up with $35 of their own money, which is the equivalent of a month's worth of allowance. And my daughter just bought a pair for $70, and they were on sale. They don't hesitate to look at sale shoes. They'll look at last year's models. My little son, and he won't hear this, so I can tell this story. He's 10. He looked in a catalog, and not only did he buy last year's shoe, which was on sale for half price, but it was actually a girl's shoe.
When he
said to me, he couldn't tell what color it was in the catalog. It looked like it might be purple. So he said, ask what the color is. So I asked, and they told me it was royal blue. He said, that's okay. I'll go with royal blue. So he bought a pair of royal blue girl shoes for half price, and he wears them all the time, and he's happy as a clam. And I'm only allowed to say this to people he doesn't know.
Your secret is safe.
Yes.
Mary Lou, when is the best time to introduce savings accounts and banking?
I first started the allowances when I started the savings at a very small amount.
You took them to the bank at that time?
No, piggy bank.
Okay, piggy bank
is great. My sister-in-law has added to that. She actually said it has to be a clear piggy bank so that they can see how that it adds. I think, at least I remember when I was a child, you know, rocking it and listening to the noise that it made. But for her children, she says they have to see it. So she gets a clear jar for them so that they can see. And once it's full, then she takes it to a children-friendly bank and they deposit it. And then they wait until that bank or the piggy bank fills up again and then they deposit it, so that they can actually see that it's growing. And then as you get the statements, you can say, wow, look at this. You got however much interest. And she actually puts it on the counter so they can see how much they earned in interest in the change, so that they can see that they didn't have to add that. The bank did it for them just by holding their money safe for them. So I really recommend doing it at a young age. And then something I wasn't as good at, but I highly recommend, is starting a checking account when they're in high school. And I loved your idea of doing it earlier than that with using your own at home.
Mm-hmm.
Great idea. Because I realized when my daughter went away to college and I went to open the bank account, I thought, oh, my gosh, I have never showed her how to write a check. I have never showed her how to balance a checkbook. And so I had to do that before I drove off.
And, you know, that's really common. I hear this from a lot of parents who say that, well, they tell stories on themselves and how they went off to college without knowing how to do this. And very embarrassing stories about how, you know, a woman went into the bank and wanted to open an account. And then they asked her, well, do you want a savings account or a checking account? And she didn't know what the difference was. And embarrassed, she left. And this was when she was away at college.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't pick these things up by osmosis, even though you think they might. So doing it before they go away to school, it's really important.
And certainly at Christmas time, she came home with all her bank statements and said, how do I balance this checkbook? So obviously that was another time to sit mm-hmm. down and actually show her how to do it. And it really brought it home to me that I really hadn't done my job.
In high school, when my kids had summer jobs, that's when we opened a checking account. And I said, this money is for you to spend or save, but you have to write a check to your savings account if you want to put some in there. So they had written a few checks before they went away. I don't know how well they balanced their checkbooks.
Also, Mary Lou's idea of the savings banks is a really good one. I do a column every year. What I do is I go through catalogs and sort of just keep an eye out at toy stores and things for interesting little savings banks. And I always do the latest version of the traditional piggy bank. This year it was Babe, you know, the movie. Babe, and my daughter, who's a big Babe fan, now has this Babe piggy bank on her desk. And she's 14, so this isn't just for little kids. But, you know, some of them now, that you can get talking banks. You can get collectible banks. In one of the ones that I mentioned this year was Star Trek figures that were really kind of neat, that appeal to kids, both young and old. And it's sort of a way to get them interested in putting cash away before they open a bank account.
My niece and nephew have banks where the money goes funny directions as it goes jiggle,
yes,
jiggle down into
thing.
Slots.
We have that in our kitchen, and it goes back and forth, and it's really neat. Kids like it.
You know, it's interesting. One of the things I'm thinking about as we're talking about this is how important it is that money is tangible mm-hmm. for kids at a certain age. And I was thinking, I'm sorry that we didn't use those little sleeves, you know, to roll up the money, those mm-hmm. little bank sleeves, because by the time we got around to that, the kids were sort of older and jaded, and we would say, oh, if you take the whole pile of pennies and put them in the sleeves, we'll give you a certain percent. Nobody wanted to take the time to do it. It was really depressing. Now, in terms of not tangible stuff, Janet, what about buying stocks? Do you think that children should do that? And if so, what's the best way to teach children about that kind of investing?
I think it's a great idea. And what I have found is it's probably a minority of children who do this sort of thing, who invest themselves, but it's a very enthusiastic minority. And usually it's either a parent or, in particular, a grandparent who has gotten the kids started. Maybe they have an interest. If you're the parent, if you're the grandparent, if you have an interest in investing, share it with your kids or grandkids. It's a great way for the generations to come together in a common interest. Buy the children, instead of a product for Christmas or the holidays or a birthday, buy a share in of the company that makes the product. Buy them a share in Toys R Us, or buy them a share in Nike or some other thing, you know, Wendy's, McDonald's. I mean, pick a company that kids like to buy or shop at. And then once they get started in this, they could add to this. They could, you know, buy additional shares for themselves, or at the very least, just follow the stock's price in the newspaper. And I find that kids can understand the basics of stock ownership at a fairly young age, even in fifth or sixth grade. I mean, they can understand the idea of owning a share of a company, you know, becoming a part owner of a company. They can appreciate that. My daughter's class, she is in eighth grade, and this year they did something a little more advanced. They played something called the stock market game, which is a school-based exercise. It's sponsored by the Securities Industry Association, and you can do it online, but it's a school-based program that they do for 10 weeks in either the spring semester or the fall semester, or they can do both if they wish. But what they do is they play in teams, and then they get $100,000 of, you know, virtual money if they're playing online, and they invest the money, and they have to research stocks and decide how they're going to invest it and see how well they do. And I think that's a great exercise for kids maybe a little older. I think for fifth and sixth grade, unless they're particularly precocious kids, it's a little bit complicated for them. But certainly the understanding the principle of stock ownership is something that I've had people tell me that they've gotten, their grandparents tell me that they've gotten their first and second graders interested in this simply by, you know, buying them a share in Disney and then showing the child how to follow the price of the stock in the newspaper.
It's exciting to do
it
that.
It is. Yes, it is.
Mary Lou, how are small business ventures a good learning tool?
When I think of a small business venture, I have to go beyond the Kool-Aid stand, although many parents would probably disagree with that. And the thing that I like to see them get involved in first is a charity environment first, something that they're giving to others rather than trying to make money for themselves. I think that way you take away the emotionalism a little bit, and they're actually doing it for a bigger cause than themselves. And so you're able to teach some things without them getting emotional about it. In other words, if you spend some money in order to make some money, before you have that profit, you actually have to pay off your debt. And I think if it's something for charity, it's a whole lot easier to do that than if it's something that I'm trying to earn money for myself and I'm having to pay off my own debt. I think it has some problems, has potentials for problems. So I always like to encourage something for charity first.
That's very important. I was just thinking we were talking about all kinds of budgeting, but we hadn't talked about budgeting for any kind of charitable giving.
I think that charitable giving is, from my experience, that's something that kids tend to pick up everything from their parents. So parents need to really be aware of how they're using their money and how they're talking to each other about money, because even if you're not talking directly to the kids, they're going to pick things up. And charitable giving is something that they pick up. You know, whether you donate to the Salvation Army or whether it's the collection plate in church on Sunday or whether you go to a homeless shelter or donate toys or whatever, or used clothing, they really do pick up on that.
Janet, what about sharing a family's finances? Is it appropriate for parents to share that with their children?
Not for very young children, and probably not even for elementary school age children, because they don't really understand. Whether you make $30,000 a year or $130,000 a year, the numbers are just too big for them to comprehend. And they're certainly more than the $100 bicycle that they want to buy. You know, the numbers just don't fit their mind, their mental development, I don't think. Plus, they will blab them to all their friends, and you know, you deserve your privacy. So often when kids ask questions at that age, like, you know, how much do you make, or are we rich, or are we poor, they're really fishing for something. They're fishing for perhaps reassurance, or they want to know that they're not going to be homeless in the street because perhaps they've seen a show. It's a good thing to ask your kids, well, why do you ask? Why are you asking the question? You know, it may be that they've seen a report on homeless people on TV. It may be that you and your spouse have been having a discussion on whether to buy a new car or get the old one fixed, and they're kind of worried about how you're going to pay for this. Maybe you're your job is in jeopardy. So, you know, ask them why they're asking the question. They may be simply in search of reassurance or some idea of how you fit in relative to their friends. By the time they're in high school, though, and are 16 or 17 years old, especially facing college, I think a fairly frank discussion of the family's finances is in order.
Janet, before we close, would you please give the website where people can log on and get information?
Right. The column that I write, Ask Dr. Tightwad, does appear in Kiplinger's magazine monthly, but it also appears on our website in a weekly version. The website is www.kiplinger.com.
Can you please repeat that web address?
Yes. Our web address is www.kiplinger.com, and you just click on the Kids and Money icon, and it'll take you right to Dr. Tightwad. We also have an 800 number, which is 1-800-280-7165.
I want to repeat that number.
Yes, I'll repeat it. It's 1-800-280-7165.
Well, we're sorry that we can't move this topic on right now to helping parents manage our own financial resources, but we do want to thank Janet Bodner and Mary Lou Werthmann for their guidance about children and money. Our gift for caller number 3 on our listener's poll is an autographed copy of Janet Bodner's wonderful book, Dr. Tightwad's Money Smart Kids. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 to answer the following question. What experience has your family had with children learning to manage money?
We'd like to send you Dr. Tightwad's Money Smart Kids, so call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573. You can also reach Parents Perspective through your local station or by email to parentspr@aol.com. Or to learn more about us and our book, Parents as Mentors, now available at all bookstores, visit our website, http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.